Today's daf is Ayin Zayin. We're going to start at the top from Amar Amemar. Okay. Today is going to be one of these dapim where everything can be read in different ways. Okay, we're going to have Girsaot and opposite Girsaot, and that's why the daf is so short, and there's a very long commentary on it. Okay, we're going to start off with, okay, we missed learning the daf all about Kinyanim, where there was a difference between a Sfina and whether you need, when you pass on otiot, meaning a shtar, a commitment, do you, let's say, okay, the case really is the basic case. I have a loan out. I owe somebody money. And that person has a shtar that says I owe them money. They take the shtar and sell it to you. Okay? Or they give it to you. How do they transfer that shtar to you? Is it enough? Do they just, they pass the shtar to you, and in the act of passing it from the malve to the new person, he acquires the rights to collect that loan? Or do we say that Masir is not good enough and that you need a shtar, which means a new document that says, I am giving you rights to this shtar halva'a that I have, you know, to this IOU, and then, you know, you would give me that shtar. So there's a few confusing things, which is, if you say otiot niknopim masira, does that mean there's no need for a secondary shtar? That's the way the Rashbam holds. Okay, there's no need for a secondary shtar. All you have to do is pass the shtar chov to me. Other people say, no. You need both a new shtar and the shtar has to be passed. Okay, so there's a bit of a, that's Rabbeinu Gershom Oragola. He says that you need both a new document to be written and for it to be passed. It's a little confusing whether you need just Mesira or you need a new shtar. Okay, so anyway, let's start with this. Amar Amemar, Hilchita. So there was a debate about, you know, how you're acquiring this this otiot, okay, the shtar. So Hilchita, the halacha is otiot niknop b'mesira. Okay, they're niknop b'mesira, which means, again, according to the Rashbam, this means we paskin, all you have to do is pass over the shtar. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom Oragavala, it's not enough just to have the shtar itself. You need both to write a new shtar that says, I'm giving you rights to my old shtar, and to pass over the shtar. It would need both things. That's the first girsa. Okay? Now, the second girsa is, and by the way, the Rashbam adds, based on the very end of yesterday's sugya, he says, if you look in the first three lines of the Rashbam, first he says, Hachi Garsinam, which means, this is how we read it, meaning not everybody reads it this way. Amar Amemar Hochta Otiot Niknop B'Mesira K'Rebi. Okay, this was Paskan like Rebbe in the previous sugya. Fine, and then he says, V'chein Riyata Tegmaru Maskana B'Harbe Mekomot, and we see this Maskana in other places, Otiot Niknop B'Mesira, because this sugya comes up in lots of other places. V'lot Tzarech L'michtav, and here he adds, you don't have to say, Kanelach V'chol Shibuda V'lo Shum Shtar. Okay, you don't need to say, number one, Kanelach V'chol Shibude, Amakne this to you with all the Shibud. What's the other option? If I just pass you the Shtar, I might be just giving you the parchment, okay? Which is written on. So, which the Gemara yesterday ended with, what is, he need the paper to cover his jar? You know, is that what he needs it for? And the answer was, yeah, according to me, yeah, maybe that's what you're giving him, just a piece of paper. So, according to the Rashbam, you don't have to say, you know, you don't need to add those extra words that mean that I'm not just giving you the parchment, I'm giving you what it says in the parchment. Okay, he paskins that you don't need to do that. Okay, it doesn't say that explicitly in the Gemara, but that's what he claims, that's how we're paskining. And then v'lo shum shtar, that's his addition that I said before, which is, and you don't need to write an additional shtar that says, I'm giving you this IOU and it's going to be yours. Okay. The opposite girsa appears in many of the other Rishonim, which is Amar Amemar Hilchata Otiot Ein Otiot Niknop Mesira. Okay, they're not acquired by Mesira, which means that the sugya is going to read the exact opposite. Now, this would be very simple if it were just this line, but now we're going to have to read the whole sugya. Okay, we're going to have a number of alternate readings of the sugya. We'll see how many we can get through today. So they say the halach is Ein Otiot Niknop Mesira. And then not kerebi, but kechachamim. Okay, they have a mamash opposite girsa, which would mean that it's not enough to pass over, right, the document. You would need to write a new document. Okay, that's what you would need. You would need to basically write a new document. And if you just passed over the shtar, then he would only acquire the parchment and not what's the content of the shtar. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Amar le Rav Ashi la Meimar. Gemara o Sfara? Is this, Gemara always means a Kabbalah. Is this a Masoret that you received that this is a Halacha? Or Svara? Or did you say that this logically seems to make sense? Amar le Gemara. Okay, he says, I have a Masoret about it. Okay, this is my Masoret. That this is the halacha. I didn't think it was not because it was logical per se, just because that's what I was taught. Amar Rav Ashi, svara nami hu. Okay, what does he say? It's also very logical. Why is it logical? Okay, so now we have to read this according to each reading. Okay, so let's start with the Rashbam, the first commentary. So if you want to say that otiot niknopa mesira is logical, what's the logic? Svara nami hu, de otiot mile ninhu. Umili b'mili lo miknin. What does he say? Otiot are words. In other words, a shtar is just words. So you can't purchase one shtar with words alone. You can't just take another shtar. You can't, now either this would mean, right, you can't just pass over the words, or you can't write a new shtar that says, I owe you, and that would be enough. You need a formal act, okay? Now, this is also, we've talked about this before, this would be also like money, where money has no inherent value, or there's certain types of ways, we're going to see this later, that you can't do a kinyan chalipin with money. You can't just do a symbolic act, okay? That doesn't acquire, you can't acquire money like that. You need some formal type of kinyan, some act. Here also, the shtar doesn't have any inherent value. Because it has no inherent value, you can't just pass it over with another shtar. In other words, you need to actually have a physical act where you pass this item over. That would be the way the Rashbam reads this sugya. And then, let's continue. We'll read the whole thing according to the Rashbam, and then we'll go back and read it the other way. Vilo, is it really true that words can't be acquired with other words, with, you know, writing another shtar, let's say? Vahama Rabba Bar Yitzchak. I'm a Rav. Okay, now we're going to have a long statement. We're only going to get to the end. We're going to remember why we have to get to the end to figure out why this is here. So first let's understand the content, then we'll go back to why it's here. V'hama Rabba Bar Yitzchak, I'm a Rav. Shnei shtarotim. There's two types of shtarot. Zechu b'sadeh l'ploni v'kitvu lo et hashtar. If I say to someone, acquire this field for someone, okay, zechu, what do we learn? Zachin la'adam shalo b'fanav. Remember, you can acquire. If I give you a gift for someone, let's say you want to give someone a gift on Shabbat. You're not supposed to be mezakeh someone on Shabbat. So I give it to someone who's right next to me on Erev Shabbat, and I say, I'm mezakeh you for the person I'm going to on Shabbat. They can already gain rights to the item for you, which means that when I give it to you on Shabbat, I'm not actually transferring rights to you. I've already transferred the rights yesterday through some middleman. Okay, that works. So, likewise, you can say zechu b'sadeh l'ploni v'kitvu lo et hashtar, and write the shtar for him. Let's say I change my mind after I say this. So am I allowed to change my mind? Well, I already was mezakeh you to the sadeh, because I said zechu, I already gave it to the person, so it's already yours. From the moment I say zechu b'sadeh, you're zocheh in the sadeh for the person. But I say kitvu lo et hashtar, so what does he say? Chozer b'shtar ve'eno chozer b'sadeh. I can change my mind about the shtar, because the shtar wasn't yet written, and the shtar wasn't yet, right? The shtar at this point is just words, right? So I could change my mind about that. Ve'eino chozer b'sadeh. But I can't change my mind about the field. You already acquired the field. Now, what does that mean? So you now have the field, okay? But you don't have a document attesting to it. Now, what's the relevance of this? It's what would be in my interest to be chozer b'shtar? So that there won't be a shtar written. I gave you the land. I'm not going to claim it's mine anymore. So you have the land, but I don't have a shtar written. So the Mefreshim explained the Tosfos quotes this, that if I have a shtar, we always learn the shtar kala itle, that everybody hears about it once there's a shtar written. Whereas if there's no shtar written, people don't necessarily hear about it. So what's the issue? I don't want people to know that I gave this land to you, because it'll look like, it's assumed, they won't, okay, so we're going to see later that some of the Mefreshim say this is only works if I'm giving you a gift. But even if I'm giving you as a gift, people don't know whether I gave it to you as a gift or whether I sold it to you. They know there's a shtar. They know that I transferred the property to you. So they might think that I was desperate for money, and that's why I sold it to you. They might not know that I gave it to you as a gift. And although some people say it could be I sold it to you also. And what will they think? That I'm desperate for money. And therefore, if I go for a loan, they won't want to give me a loan. I have a bad credit rating. So therefore, it doesn't look good for me to have this shtar out there. So there would be a motivation for me to basically say, I don't want to give you the shtar. Okay? Rabbeinu Tam says that it's only a shtar matana. Because if it was a shtar mecher, the person who bought it could say, I never would have bought this field had I known it was going to come without a document. And therefore, I'm giving you back the field. Like, my sale is canceled because I'm not willing to do this without getting a shtar. So therefore, he claims it must only be in a case where someone's giving a gift, because otherwise there could be no validity. You know, the lokach can always be chozer bo and say, hey, give me a shtar, and insist that he get the shtar. But others say that it could be actually in a mecher also, but the Rabbeinu Tam, I think, is pretty convincing that it doesn't make any sense that you would give someone a sadeh, sell it to him, and he would not end up with a shtar. So, therefore, I think Rabbeinu Tam makes a lot of sense that it's only talking about a gift here. Okay, that's the first type of shtar. The second is, al menat shetichtivu lo et hashtar. If I say, zechu b'sadeh zeh, under the condition that you write him a shtar, then, since it's conditioned, your zechia is conditioned upon writing the shtar, right? Remember, you're the middleman. So therefore, I can be chozer b'en b'shtar b'en b'sadeh, because If I tell you in the end, I don't want you writing the shtar, which I'm allowed to be chozer bo, then the condition isn't fulfilled, and then you're not zoche to the field. Okay, fine. So far, not yet connected. Last one is going to be connected. Rav Chiya bar Avin Amarav, shlosha shtarotein. He says, hey, you forgot one. There's a third type. Okay, trei hadamaran. The first two, like you said. Idach, the other one is, im kadam mocher v'katavet hashtar. Okay, if the mocher wrote the shtar, ke'otash shaninu. Like we said, kotvin shtar lemocher, af al pi she'en lokeach imo. Okay, you could write a shtar, right? Let's say the seller writes the shtar, even though the lokeach isn't there. Kevan sheichzik ze bakarka. If, let's say, I write a shtar to sell my property to someone, but they're not here, but they are where the land is. So they go into the land and make a chazaka on the land. Niknes shtar b'chol makom shehu. The shtar is automatically, when he does the chazaka, you remember we learned this, when he does the chazaka on the property, he acquires the shtar with that chazaka. Okay? V'zoi shashaninu, and this is what we learned. Nechasim she'en lamachroyut, we've seen this a number of times, right? Movable property, like the shtar. Niknim im nechasim she'yesh lamachroyut are acquired, we call this kinyan agav. Agav karka. While you're doing the kinyan on the karka, you can acquire other things. Okay? Bekesef, b'shtar, b'chazaka, right? Those are the three ways that you're koneh. Nechasim sheyesh lamachrayut, land, would be with money, with a shtar, and with a chazaka. So therefore, okay, this would be acquired. Now, what's the relevance of this to here? Okay, so, one second. Right, so what does this sound like? Okay, the simple reading of this, which we're going to say has a lot of difficulties, but the simple reading of this is very simply. If, in this case, what do you see? The shtar was acquired to him without having to pass it on, right? There was no physical passing of the shtar. Okay, so what does the Gemara obviously answer? Which is why we're going to say this question is quite a strange question, because the answer is totally obvious. And that's what we're going to suggest a different possibility of reading this. But what is the Gemara answer? Agav shane. A kinyan agav is different. In other words, it's not that the shtar was passed on without a mesira, without any sort of kinyan. There was a different kinyan going on here. That's the whole deal about a kinyan agav. Kinyan agav is that you acquire with one kinyan, you can basically cancel out the need for the other kinyan. So, of course, there was no kinyan for the shtar here. This doesn't teach you about shtarot in general. And as we brought this as a question on, again, according to the Rosh Brahms reading, that mele can't be acquired with mele, right? You need a mesira, an act of mesira. We said, but here you have a shtar that was nikneh without an act of mesira. And then the Gemara answers, no, it was acquired by a different act of kinyan, by this act of the kinyan agav, because the land had a kinyan, and that applied to here. Okay, so it's a good answer. The problem is that the answer is so good that the question really seemed lo b'makom. So I'm going to give you another alternative in a minute. The second problem with this answer is that the next line of the Gemara is also somewhat complicated. The Gemara is now going to bring a proof for this answer, where again, number one, the answer is so simple, it doesn't seem to need to require a proof. And the proof is a little bit strange. Deha madbea delo nikne b'chalipin v'agav ara nikne. Just like a kinyan on a madbea, on money, can't be through some symbolic act, right? You can't use a chalipa, and that's where we do like a kinyan, where we do a barter, we switch things, and it's more like of a symbolic act. V'agav ara nikne, and yet it is acquired through this kinyan agav, okay? So now, what's the connection of this proof from the matbea? It's a little bit strange, because matbea isn't mili, it's not dvarim. It's not really like a star. We were trying to say star is a unique category, so why are we proving it from kesef, which is actually something that you might say, okay, well, kesef is something, but it's also symbolic of something, so maybe it is a little like a star. Anyway, so one possible answer is to say that a kinyan agav is really, at first glance, the Gemara thinks that a kinyan agav, right, what's our problem? Our problem is, if it's kinyan agav, then we know there's some other kinyan, and why would we be suggesting that the star was nikneh without some sort of kinyan? So maybe they thought that a kinyan agav is really just dvarim ba'alma when it comes to the shtar that's nikneh. Because the kinyan was done to something else, and the shtar is just dvarim, and the shtar is kind of batel to the karka, right? It's secondary to the karka. And there's actually no kinyan going on for the shtar. How does the shtar get acquired? Because it's just not as important as the karka, and therefore it's canceled to the karka. Really, the kinyan is done on the karka, and the shtar just kind of goes along with it. Okay, so then the Gemara says, no, the shtar is actually not canceled by the karka. The way kinyan agav works is that the kinyan works as a kinyan on the karka, even though the karka is not there. Okay, and therefore it affects a shtar, a kinyan on the shtar, and therefore you can't ask a question for kinyan agav, because kinyan agav works that there's one kinyan done to the land, and with that it's as if we've done a kinyan to the shtar, which means that this doesn't raise a question to how could shtar nikneh, right? If we said shtar nikneh b'mesira, here there's no mesira. So the Gemara answers, here there's an imaginary mesira. It's as if a mesira was done to it. And then the proof from the matbea is that also with money, right, you can't do any sort of symbolic kinyan. So there is no symbolic kinyan going on. There's an actual kinyan going on. It's that when you acquire the land, you acquire the money at the same time. It's as if there was some, it's not symbolic, it's as if something actually was affected there. Okay, that's one possible answer of reading it. Another, if we have all these problems with this reading, that might support the whole other girsa of the sugya, which is that otiot einam nikneh b'mesira. And then, okay, so let's just quickly read through the sugya through that. Okay, otiot can't be acquired through mesira like Rebbe, right? And then Rav Ashi comes and says, I have a svara for it because... Okay, so let's review. Otiyot einam nikneh b'mesira means you need to actually write a document to say, I'm buying, right? I'm acquiring this document from you, this IOU from you. I'm acquiring, or the seller says, I'm selling you my rights to this IOU. You'd have to have a document. So Rav Ashi says, it's a svara that this is the case because, right? Mile b'mile lo miknin, right? It wouldn't be enough. Wait, so I have to remember how this works, right? Svar nam yudotio niknop einam niknop b'mesira, because mile b'mile lo miknen, right? That you would need, in a second. Right, you can't just pass over your IOU, you need to actually write a document about it. Otherwise, it would be like I'm just handing you a piece of, right, the paper. In other words, if you want to acquire the content of it, you have to say, right, you'd have to say the words, I'm giving you kol shibud sheyeshbo, right? And you'd have to basically make it clear that you're handing over the shibud and not just the document. If I just did a masira, right, that wouldn't be enough. It would look like I'm just giving you the piece of paper. So then the Gemara asks, but wait a minute, right? What about this case about the shtar, right? That if you kone by a kinyan agav, so the way they read this is, why should agav work? Okay, now this is a bit of a strange answer, but if I'm selling you my land and I write up a shtar for it, it's not enough that I just wrote up this shtar. I should also have a document that says what I'm doing, okay, that says that this shtar is valid. Okay, now that's a bit strange. We'll get to it in a minute. What do you mean? Every time you write a shtar, you need to write a shtar that says the shtar is valid. Okay, but if I write a shtar and I hand it, okay, again, all these readings have difficulties, okay, and that's why there's so many different interpretations of what's going on here. If I have a document and I hand it to you, then obviously that says I'm selling you my house, so obviously I'm giving you the meaning of what's in that document. But if I write up a document and I don't actually give it to you physically, right? Because here, what did he say? He says, Not this case. The case is, I wrote a shtar, even though the lokech's not with me, and then the lokech went and was machzik the karka. In order to make a shtar like that effective, I might need to make a shtar that says that shtar is an effective shtar, because I didn't actually pass it over to you. Without the act of passing it over to you, maybe it's missing something, and that's what they're saying. And what's the point then?
Yeah, notary public on it.
Right, a notary would have helped, yes. So the question is, why should an agav work? When, right? In other words, in a kinyan agav, we should have to insist that I write a shtar that says that this shtar is a valid shtar. And the answer is, no, a kinyan agav is strong enough that there's no need for a shtar. In other words, in a regular case where I'm passing over my shtar chov to you, then I would need a shtar. But in this case of a kinyan agav, the kinyan is strong enough that I don't need to actually do that. Okay? And then, right, so, right, okay. And by the way, where do we know that if this concept of, if I give you the shtar, it obviously is effective, but if I didn't give it to you, then maybe it's not good enough and I would need to write a shtar to say that this is an effective shtar. It comes from Yirmiyahu where he says, "Ve'akach et sefer mikneh." Remember, he has him write up this document. He asks the sofer to come and write up the document. And then he says, "Ve'akach et sefer mikneh." And they say, from here, what do you see? "Ve'akach, I have to take the document." And in this case, nobody took the document, so there's something missing. So that's why they suggested that maybe there would have been a need to write an additional shtar to make it a valid shtar. Okay, again, it's a bit of a weird answer, but like I said, there's clearly difficulties here in all the directions, and that's what led to all the different versions. Okay, back to the Gemara. Sorry that we're very off the daf today, but I wanted to, we're not really off the daf, it's just many different interpretations about how to understand the words in the Gemara. Okay, kiha'a. So now, how do we know, this is just a side thing, and we've learned this in the past, how do we know that a matbea delo nikne b'chalipin can be acquired derech this kinyan agav? You'll probably remember this story once I start quoting it, because it was an interesting, it was something you could easily visualize. Ki hadera papa havalu tracer alfe zuze bechozai. He had 12,000 zuzim that he had given to someone to watch in the city of Chozai, which was very far away, and he had no way to get it back without going physically himself, because the people who were watching it, what happens? They assume responsibility until it gets back to him. And they're not going to send 12,000 zuzim with somebody who's not going to assume responsibility for them. In other words, they send it, what happens? Something happens to them on the way. The guy gets robbed, right? Imagine nowadays, right? No one would walk around carrying that much cash, right, without being worried something might happen to it. And they said, well, we're not giving it to whoever you send, because until it gets to you, we're going to be fully responsible for it. And we don't want to be responsible. So what did our papa do? He came up with a plan where he found someone who was willing to do this. I don't know why Rav Shmuel Bar Acha was willing to do this. But akninu niale le Rav Shmuel Bar Acha. He was makne, the money the people in Bechozai were going to return to him, agav asifa debete, using, right, by, he sold him the threshold of his house, or there's a different interpretation of what exactly the Sefa, Sifa Debate is, but let's say some little portion of his house he sold him. And he said, I'm selling you this, and when you acquire that land, you will acquire all the money, which means that Rav Shmuel Bar Acha was going to immediately be zochet to the money from the moment he got it, which means that the people who were watching it would say, oh, we're happy to give it to you, because if you're acquiring it, well, then you acquire full responsibility for it. So therefore, Rav Papa finally found a way to do it. Ki ata, when Rav Shmuel Bar Acha came back, nafik la'ape atvach. He went to greet him, and again, different interpretations of Atvach is, maybe it's a certain place. He ran all the way out to the city of Tvach to go meet him, because he was, okay, number one, he was so excited to get his money, possibly. He was so happy he finally got this lost money that he had no way to retrieve. Or number two, he was worried that once he got into the city, there would be some, people would know about it, people would start saying, oh, it's my money or something. There would be some sort of debate about it. He wanted to make sure he preempted before he got into the city and that he got his money back. Or a bunch of different interpretations why he went all the way out there to get it. Okay, so that proves that you can be kone matbea agav karka. Okay, finished with that section. Now, very easy part. Avalomachar loat avadim veloat amartzufim veloat antiki. This was, if you buy a boat, you don't acquire the people who work on the boat. You don't acquire the martzufim. Those are the bags that you would hold the merchandise in. And you don't acquire the antiki, which I already explained was the merchandise, but the Gemara didn't explain that yet. We're going to see it right now. My antiki, Amar Papa, iska de begavai. That's the merchandise that was inside the boat. Okay. Next Mishnah. Macharta karon lo macharta pradot. Macharta pradot lo macharta karon. Very similar, right? If you sell a wagon, it doesn't include the animals that pull the wagon. If you sell, if you buy the animals, the mules, lo macharta karon, you didn't sell, I'm sorry, not acquire, I was confusing with the kinyanim. You know, it's, when you sell, right, like we have to sell the boat, what parts of the boat are included? If I sell the wagon, it only includes the wagon, it doesn't include the mules that are pulling the wagon. If I sell the mules, it doesn't include the wagon, it just includes the mules. If I sell machar tatsemed, la machar tabakar, if you sell the yoke, then you're not selling the animals that the yoke goes with. If you machar tabakar, la machar tatsemed, if you sell the animals, it doesn't include the yoke that comes with it, the ox we're talking about. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Hadamim Modi'im. He says it depends how much money you spent, right? This would be obvious that if you spent 150 shekel, you obviously weren't just buying the yoke, right? Nobody would spend 150 shekel on a yoke, but you might spend 150 shekel on the animal. Maybe that's a low amount for the animal, but let's just say, right? Some random high number. So, if it's a high amount, then obviously it was including not only the yoke, but also the animal. If it was a low amount, then...
So arbitrary, though.
Right. That's not such a hazy.
It's arbitrary. Right.
Yeah,
well, that... Because you could... Right.
Could
there's price fluctuations.
Yoke, or it could be, no. Whatever. Whatever you value.
Well, that's what he's saying, that you can... Right. That you can try to figure out... Well, this goes back to... And we're going to see in the Gemara. This goes back to Din Ona'ah. And our... If you remember, we had a whole debate about what things Ona'ah applies to. Someone open the window, maybe get some air. What things Ona'ah applies to and which things are beyond the laws of Ona'ah, because, like Karka, if you remember, there was a basic three. There was Karka, Avadim, and... Karka, Avadim, I'm forgetting them. One second. The three things that there's clearly no Ona'ah on. And then there was a thing about maybe Sifrei Torah and Behemot. And, okay, but, one second, where is it? Karka. Avadim Shtarot, right, Shtarot also. And Hekdeshot. Okay? So anyway, those four things there's clearly no Ona'ah for, but other things it's debatable, or other things not at all. So anyway, Rabbi Yehuda says, Hademim Modi'im. So Ketzad, here he says, okay, what's a good example? Amar lo mechur litzimdecha b'matayim zuz. Hadabar yadua she'en amatzeme b'matayim zuz, right? Matayim zuz was a large amount of money, right? That's what your ketubah was for, the value of a ketubah. You're not going to sell a tzemed, this is a yoke, for matayim zuz. The Chachamim Romim Ein Hadamim Ra'aya. Chachamim say the money can't prove it, exactly like you said. In other words, it doesn't work. Okay. Tani Rav Tachlifa Barma Arava Kamei de Rabbi Aval. Machar Tak. So Rav. Okay, first thing is very simple. The last part's going to also be something that's a bit complicated. I think I'm going to stick with kind of one sort of interpretation instead of giving you. We did enough different interpretations for today, but we'll see. Okay, the beginning part's simple, then we'll get a little more complicated, but understand that this interpretation also has weaknesses, and like the earlier sugya. Tani Rav Tachlifa Barma Arava. So Rav Tachlifa Barma Arava brings a braita before Rabbi Avahu. Macharta karon, macharta pradot. The opposite, right? If you sell the wagon, it includes the mules. V'ha nansnan lo machar, but don't we say in our Mishnah, it doesn't. Ha anan lo machar tnan, right? Doesn't our Mishnah say lo? Amar le ismiye. So he says, should I wipe this brayta out then? In other words, was this just a mistaken brayta? Amar le lo titarge matnitich ba'adukin bo. Read your version, your brayta, in a case where it's attached. If you sell a wagon and the mules are attached, then we're going to say the mules are included. And if you sell your wagon without the mules attached, then we're going to say it's not included. Okay, again, I'm going to just repeat like I say every time, which is it's very possible there were two different opinions One, the Braita, one, the Mishnah, and they actually disagree with each other. But the Gemara always likes to say, well, if we can combine them and figure out a way that everything works together, then it's better. So they just say two different situations, and that satisfies them better. Okay. Machar tatzemed lo machar tabachkar. Hechidami. Ilema dekaru litzim detzimda ulebakar bakar. We've also seen this type of sugya. Okay, right? If you say that people call it tzemed etzemed, and a bakar bakar, and nobody calls, right? Nobody mixes the two, right? You're buying a yoke, you buy a yoke. You're buying the ox, you buy the ox. Nobody confuses the terms. So pshita, then it's obvious that tzimda zavinle, bakar lo zavinle, right? Then it's obvious that he's selling him the yoke, and he's not selling him the ox, or vice versa. Ella dekaru le nami le bakar tzimda, kule zavinla. If you call the bakar at tzemed, if people say when I sell you the yoke, they mean the yoke with the animal, then also it's obvious that both are included. So what's the case of the Mishnah where we say if you sell one, it doesn't include the other? The assumption is the Mishnah wouldn't tell us something that's totally obvious. So lo tzricha ba'adra dekar le tzimd tzimdu le bakar bakar. Right, it's a place where people call it tzemed tzemed a bakar bakar. The ikanami, but there are some. Dekaru lebakar tzimda, right? That some people call the bakar tzemed. And since some people, you mean that when they say it, okay, when they say tzimda, they also often include the bakar. That's the case for Rabbi Yehuda Savar, hadamim modi'im, for Rabbanan Savre, ein hadamim ra'aya. Okay, that's where the machloket is. The machloket is only a case where some people mean that when they say I'm selling the yoke, they might mean that they're including the ox, and therefore, when I bought this, it's not clear whether it includes it or not. And that's where Rabbi Yehuda kicks and says, well, then we'll look at the price and we'll see how much you paid and we'll decide whether it was included or not, which sounds perfectly reasonable. Rabbanan Savre, Ein Hadamim Raya. Okay, so now, what does it mean that Ein Hadamim Raya, according to them? So what do you think this means? It means that the money doesn't prove anything. And therefore, what are we going to assume? If you sold a tzemed, you get a tzemed. So the bakar, you get a bakar, right? You can't use the money as proof. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Im ein hadamim raya, let's say you spent 200 zuz, okay? You bought a tzemed, right, which is a yoke, which clearly doesn't go for 200 zuz, and you spent 200 zuz on it. So according to Chachamim, what do we assume? If you say, ein hadamim modi'im, so what do you say? You bought a tzemed, you said you were buying a tzemed, you got a tzemed, period, just the tzemed. So wait a minute. Imein adamim raya, and therefore you got your tzemed, and you, nothing more, lehavi bito mekach. This is clearly a case of ona'ah. You could say, hey, I paid way more than the market price, if you remember, and this is why there's going to be complications, because we had all different opinions about this exactly, but let's go with the basic. Under 1/6, what do we say? If it's less than a sixth difference, right, then the mekach is a good mekach. If it's 1/6, that's din ona'ah. And then there were different interpretations, whether it's canceled or you just get your extra money back that you spent and the deal is a good deal. Most opinions said above 1/6, if the differentiation was so large, then clearly it's bitul mekach. Now, if you recall, though, we also had an opinion that said that if it's such a large price difference, then obviously the person who gave the money was really giving the money as a gift to the person, because no one in their right mind would ever think that they're spending that kind of money. So keep that in mind. But anyway, right now we're saying, if ein hadamim raya, then this should be a bitul mekach. It should be canceled. He shouldn't get the tzemed at all, right? There should be no sale here. He should get his money back, and the guy should keep his tzemed, and end of deal. So when we read Chachamim, what did we assume? Ein hadamim raya means machar tabakar, machar tzemed, lo machar tabakar, period. And what does it mean, lo machar tabakar? You got the tzemed. So now the Gemara says, right, and if you want to say v'chitema bitul mekach l'rabbanan leitlehu, this is where the Gemara starts to get complicated, what this means exactly. If you say the Chachamim don't hold by bitul mekach, they don't think that anything's canceled with the bitul mekach. That this can mean all sorts of things. Maybe they think there's no din ona'ah. Maybe they think there's no, okay, we're going to suggest it. Let's read it like this, okay? If you look at the Rashbam, he says, vadai ona'ah itle, because that's min haTorah, right? You can't say that, but maybe he holds that bitul mekach, there is no bitul mekach. Once you go, some people said that only at 1/6 is bitul mekach, but above 1/6, It's not, okay? Like, there's no Bitul Mekach. So if you want to say that they don't hold by Bitul Mekach, velo, is that really true that they don't hold? V'hatnan, or maybe they don't hold Bitul Mekach when it comes to animals, okay? So v'hatnan, doesn't it say in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ha-mochir sefer Torah, behema u-margalit, ein lahem ona'a. Okay, when it comes to a Sefer Torah, if you remember we talked about this, there's no value, right? It could be valued at all sorts of different prices. So there's no ona'a. Behema and jewelry also don't have ona'a. So maybe you say that maybe Chachamim hold like that. However, it says there, Amru lo, Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, lo amru ela et elu. They only said those four things I mentioned before that don't have ona'a. Eved, what do we say?
Karka.
Star, and Hekdesh. Okay? Only those four things, and it doesn't apply to Behema, so clearly Chachamim think that there is Din Ona'a. Okay, now here's the tricky part. Just because it has Din Ona'a doesn't mean it has Din Bitul Mekach, and this is where there's lots of versions about what this means exactly, but again, like I said, we're going to keep it a little simpler for this part. So what do they answer? My ein damim ra'aya. So first answer is, maybe when they say ein damim ra'aya, nami dekatane, the ein damim ra'aya that they said in the Mishnah means dehave bitul mekach. Ein damim ra'aya means the money can't prove it. However, if it is that you paid a much higher price for the tzemed, then you could claim bitul mekach. It's not that we use it to prove and say, oh, look, clearly it includes both the tzemed and the bakar. No, you get your money back and the guy gets the tzemed back, you get nothing. In other words, who is to say that it means you get your tzemed? No, maybe Chachamim meant the damim don't prove that you get both. It could just, if you way overpaid, then it's canceled. Okay, that's one option. Vibay Dema. Now, our second option is going to be what I referenced before, which is Kiyam Rabbanan Ona'au Bitul Mekach Bechdei Shada To'eh. If you want to say, right, ona'a and bitul mekach apply within a range of where you might get confused and think that that was the actual price and therefore you paid it. And when you find out that you were cheated and you paid too much money, so you get your money back. But once the price differential is so great, which obviously here if you paid matayim zuz for a tzemed, the price difference is so much greater, then you could say the Chachamim say you get your tzemed, and that's because the assumption is that all the extra money you gave was actually you were giving as a matana. And therefore, you don't have to question on Chachamim, don't they hold Bitul Mekach? Because they don't hold Bitul Mekach in this particular case because you've gone so way over the price range. Okay.